Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Basically Blind. I'm your host, Avery. This is a podcast where I share my experience living with vision loss, and we also explore other topics around diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. I recently bought something for myself that I cannot believe I have gone this long without getting it. And to kind of throw back a little bit to last week's podcast around how to set and achieve goals, one of those keys for me figuring out what I need to focus on is asking, you know, what's really hard for me? What hasn't been working? How could it be improved? And one of those goals for me is organization, just getting our home to a place where I can easily find everything and really maximizing the space and using it efficiently. And to do organization right and to get things that really work, that requires quite a bit of measuring. And the average measuring tape is not very easy to read. And I found myself measuring things and then having to have Cameron, my husband, come over and me walk over to him and be like, what's this say? How much is this? And I just got annoyed with that. So I went online and I figured there has to be something. And you know what? I was right. And I bought myself a large print measuring tape. And I have been having a lot of fun with it. It arrived today and I'm just measuring different spots on the walls where I want to put like mirror or something like that. And I'm really excited. You know, it's really empowering if someone hasn't experienced it to really be able to get tools that allow you to do things on your own that maybe you had to ask for help for in the past. And it really helps your self-worth a lot. It really can bog you down quite a bit to constantly have to ask for assistance from others, especially if it's something that, you know, myself, I had 20/20 vision for the first 10 years of my life, and my vision got really bad very quickly, and it has continued to get worse. It's a degenerative condition. And so there are even things that I have to ask for help for now that maybe I didn't have to 5-10 years ago, and that can be very frustrating. So being able to find those tools where I can do things on my own again is just, it's really empowering. So if I would implore anyone out there, if there's something that's really giving you grief, to kind of examine, well, why do I hate doing this? Why is it so hard? And seeing if maybe you just need a tool to help you do it easier. And that's what I did. And it's made a huge difference. So, you know, in the spirit though of people being able to be independent and being able to succeed, I am doing a two-part episode. So I have talked before many times about having gone through interview processes, having them not feel very good, honestly. And I was discussing this with Cam, and I'd also discussed it with a few other friends, and they were like, you know what, you should do a podcast just on this. And they were absolutely right. So that's what we're going to do. So the two part today, the first part of it is going to be exploring interview process and what employers can do to make sure that they are having a more inclusive interview process. And then next week, I'm going to go into, as the interviewee, what are things that you should be looking for as clues to know that this is an inclusive workplace? And especially if you have any sort of a disability, this is going to be a place that really will accommodate you and work to make sure that you have an experience where you feel like you have the same chance to succeed as everyone else and that you actually belong as part of the team. And, you know, you aren't just, for lack of a better term, a pity hire. That sounds really harsh, but as someone with a disability, that can be a real fear. And so it's something that, as awful as it sounds, it is a legitimate thought. And maybe people don't think that, but it's out there. And you don't want, maybe you don't feel that way, but you also don't want other people on your team potentially viewing you that way either. So let's kind of jump right into it. So I thought this through, and I went through top to bottom with like the process. So, you know, what is the process of trying to find a new job that people have to go through? Number one is, you know, finding the job posting. And then you go into the application, actually applying for it. You have a phone screen, and then you do the actual interview process. So with the job description itself, make sure that that is written in a way where you're not putting in skills that are unnecessary. I have one really solid example of this. There have been times where I have looked at job postings and the job seems really interesting and I'm really into wanting to apply, but then I get down to the requirements. And they'll also have a field on the application where you have to put in information about it, so there's no getting around it, where even though it does not list in the job description that this is an essential part of the job, one of the requirements is that you have a valid Washington State driver's license. And for myself, that means that I'm automatically out of the running for that. With low vision, I don't have a driver's license. I don't drive. And it's not just something of people with low vision. You know, there are people that have seizure disorders or, you know, they have sensory disorders where if they're behind the wheel, they can get way too stimulated. And it isn't a safe thing for them or other people for them to be on the road. So there's this massive swath of people that are being taken out. And I understand that if this is a job posting to be, for example, a bus driver, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But if this is a job as, I don't know, a marketing coordinator or something like that, where it's just maybe they want someone to have a valid driver's license so that they can force them to go on coffee runs, that's not really an essential part of that job, you know? On the flip side of that, if that's how a group would treat an individual within that job, I'm kind of happy I don't have a driver's license because I wouldn't want to have that be an essential part of what I do, is just fetching coffee. But in any case, like, make sure that everything on there actually makes sense. It pertains. Make sure that you aren't putting in stipulations that could automatically discount someone that in every other way is qualified and could do a wonderful job in that position. Another thing with the job posting is don't get fancy with it. Don't do fancy fonts. Don't do fun colors. Keep it very simple, because if you put too much in there, then it can be very difficult to read, can be very distracting for individuals. And, you know, it's not just a matter of if you are visually impaired, but also like if you have dyslexia or something like that, just keeping it as clean and simple as possible is going to help everyone be able to read it. When you're on a job website, like a careers page for a company, one thing that I've noticed that sometimes happens is that you'll go onto the careers page and it will take me a minute to actually find where they list the current openings. And that's because it's either one, just not obvious, or a trend that I've started to see is that people will put a button to click on top of an image and all of it kind of blends together. And at first I just think that it's an image and I scroll past it and I don't catch it for the longest time. So I say that if you are going to have an image and you want to put a button on top of it, my recommendation for accessibility would be to put, you know, a solid background background color there, like a box, so that that button pops out more, or just making sure that in general there's very high contrast. Like it's very clear that this is where you would go to, because it, you're not going to get people looking at it if they can't find where to look at the openings. And mind you, a lot of people just go to job boards and that's where they search and find things. But there are certain companies that, you know, I have on my radar is these are really good places to work and I would be interested in potentially applying for something if there's an opening that fits my skill set. And so I actually will check on the company website, and that's where I can run into that problem. This isn't as much the case, I feel like, with larger companies, but I would say that I've noticed it with smaller companies where for an inclusive hiring process, you need to make sure that you're doing a really good job distributing who is seeing this job description. I worked in a place once where a majority of the people were all alum of one specific school, and so they had a lot of favoritism towards that, and they would do a really good job of pushing out to all the different student groups and boards for that specific university. But then they didn't really try it with any others, which means that you're just only going to be getting a majority of applicants from that one area, which honestly, that's what they wanted, but it's not an inclusive hiring practice at all. And you are just going to end up hiring more people that are similar to the people who are there. And that's when you get into groupthink. And that's when it's very easy for the culture to turn toxic, because everyone is of the same mindset. And if someone different does come in, it's not going to be a very hospitable place for them. So make sure that you're distributing that out to a variety of places. Make sure you're using job boards. You're not just doing word of mouth and you're not just doing referrals and those are the only people that you're talking to. So those are things regarding actually posting the job and writing the description, distributing it. I'd say also when it comes to the application, keep it simple. And this is something on behalf of anyone out there applying for jobs. Keep your application as simple as possible. If you're not actually going to use cover letters, don't ask people to provide a cover letter. I hate cover letters so much. And I can understand how they can really serve a purpose at certain times, especially when you're doing a career pivot. And you can explain, here are my relevant skills and how they pertain to what I'm trying to do now, even though maybe this isn't what I've done in the past. Yeah, that makes sense. But again, like if you're not going to actually be using that when screening, don't ask for it. Also, just it drives me nuts when I will find an application that says something along the lines of, you know, upload your resume, and then they will ask you multiple times to then regurgitate all the information from your resume into the fields that that are in the application. So it might be like, it'll ask you for like your relevant experience. And then on another page, it might ask you for your work history. Yeah, that's close to the same thing. You're making me just like recopy all that information. It's a very quick way to lose people's interest, because there have been times where I have been interested in a job and the process is so complicated and long that I'll just give up. I understand that it weeds out people in that way. It will weed out people and you're getting the ones that are really dedicated, but at the same time, you're also potentially losing out on very qualified applicants that maybe they can't sit still that long. You know, a lot of portals will time out after a while. For myself, when applications are really, really long, I'm almost spent for the entire rest of the day. Like my eyes are shot after having like stared at the screen and having to type everything and do, it's just, it's not fun. It's not a good experience. And I find that a lot of people that are really qualified, those real go-getters and everything, they're busy people. Maybe they set aside like an hour or a half hour to do this, and then it's training so much longer, and they just, it turns into they don't have the time to do it. So keep it as simple as possible. Again, make sure you're using a platform that is also, it's accessible. And that goes for your job website and everything too. Not only are you using like high contrast, easy to read, but you want to make sure that it's also compatible with any screen readers, so that if someone is blind or has really low vision and they're using that, they're going to be able to easily read through the prompts and the questions. Because you, if it's not compatible, you could get some really weird looking answers back. And that's not the applicant's fault. That's on your end for not having built an accessible site. So there's the application portion. Then we move on to when we start reviewing applications, and then there, and then after reviewing, there's the phone screen. It is on the company, and this is so important, anyone that's involved with the recruiting process, whether they're the recruiter themselves, the hiring manager, a team member that's part of the interview loops, every person that is part of the interviewing process should be going through specific training to make sure that they know how to actively engage and recognize their unconscious bias they may have. I had a conversation a couple months ago now with an individual, and they were hiring for a role, and they were talking about how during the interview process, there was someone who didn't turn on their camera, and that they had thought that that was weird. And, you know, based on some other stuff that I knew, I made the comment, well, maybe they had a disability. You know, maybe they were blind and they didn't turn on the camera because they didn't want that factoring into the decision. And this person could not really understand where I was coming from. They kept pointing to the fact that, you know, on our website, we state that we're an equal opportunity employer. Well, yeah, like every company is legally obligated to put that on their website. But quite frankly, most companies aren't equal opportunity because a lot of people aren't equal opportunity. And it's not that they're going out of their way to be judgmental and to hold a bias against someone. It's just, it is human nature for everyone to have stereotypes and to have bias. And that's why it's so important to make sure that anyone that is part of the hiring process, and in general in your company, people need to be aware of this. But especially during that hiring process, you need to make sure people understand, okay, like, is this, am I actually evaluating them fairly? Or am I leaning towards some internal bias that I have here? We've talked about it in the past with, I did an entire episode around unconscious bias and everything, but it has been scientifically proven that people find it much easier to remember positive things about people that they feel are similar to themselves. And it's easier for them to also remember negative things about people that they've deemed to be different from them. And so being aware of that, actively engaging in trying to counteract that is so important during the hiring process. And not just the unconscious bias, but just training people in general on, okay, like here are some best practices of what we need to do during a hiring process. I'd say that maybe it would make sense to even just have it in the application, but ask someone what pronouns they'd like to use. And one thing that was pointed out to me recently, and once it's pointed out to you, it makes a lot of sense, but it wasn't something I'd heard before, is that you should always ask someone, what pronouns do you use, and not what are your preferred pronouns? Because when you say preferred pronouns, that sends the message that gender and gender identity are a choice, but that's not the case. That's just how people are and how they feel. And so to honor that, it's important to ask people what they use and not necessarily what they prefer. So I would include that potentially in the application process, but if you don't, then that is, once the recruiter first reaches out, that should be something they ask, as well as very early on in the process, you know, before anything else happens. You should, one, during the application process, you should advertise that, you know, if you need any assistance or accommodations, like, this is who you can reach out to and we can help you. But if you don't have it at that point, by the time that you start interacting with someone, you need to make sure that you're asking them if they need any accommodations. It's not fair to put it on the individual who's interviewing to ask. That's a very vulnerable situation. And honestly, it makes your company look really great, the fact that you're being proactive and you're actually asking. And as someone who does have a disability, that would mean a lot to me. That would go a very long way. Knowing that this is an atmosphere and a place where people want to see you succeed and they want to give you those tools, even before you get there, that's really powerful. So making sure that you ask people what accommodations they need. A lot of interviews these days are happening over Zoom, and I'd say a best practice at this point is, whether someone has indicated it or not, just enable closed captioning. That way they don't even have to ask for it. It's just there. I think that it's a really good thing to do. And sometimes, it doesn't really help me personally with having low vision. But sometimes when you're on these interviews, the sound cuts out. So, you know, maybe the sound will cut out, but the closed captioning will be more accurate. That can help as well for someone, even if they don't have any sort of a hearing impairment or that they need that. So making sure you're asking for those accommodations, that you're establishing what the pronouns are. Everyone that is interacting within an interview has been well-trained and understands that they need to actively engage in counteracting any sort of stereotype or bias that they hold. And I think it's very important to make sure that you are operating interviews in a panel fashion, because if someone does have a bias, if you have multiple people and then this person's filling out the application and everyone else isn't saying that, that's going to help counteract any inequity that exists there because of that one person's views built from their life experiences. And I mean, it's a better feeling too, I think, for the team that has to make the hiring decision, because then it's a collective decision. It's not just all put on one person. With that said, you don't necessarily need to have like 20 people in the loop. I've done those before, and that's a huge lift for the team. You know, everyone who's involved, that means that is time that they are not working on their projects for their job. And also, it's just, interviewing's really exhausting. You have to be on, you have to, you know, be sitting up straight, smiling, thinking like thoughtful questions. It's a lot. It's a lot. And so if you have to do a loop where you're talking to, you know, six different people, by the end of that loop, the applicant could possibly just like black out from exhaustion and not even know what they're saying. So keep the experience as positive for everyone involved as possible in that manner. When it comes to doing phone screens and things like that, giving options, I think, is key. A lot of companies out there like using these online initial screening platforms. And I went through a hiring process once with a company that used it, and then later had heard someone else talking about, from an accessibility standpoint, just how awful these platforms are. And I 100% agreed. What will happen a lot of time is that you'll be given a link. And the nice thing is it gives you flexibility to be able to submit your pre-screen you know, before at any time. So maybe you have time at midnight and that's what works for you. You could record at midnight and submit it and send it in. So it gives you that flexibility piece. But the way that it works is that you click this link, you go through, it has a question flash up on the screen, and you're able to practice. You get to do these practice sessions to make sure that you know how it works. But you, once you start the interview, you can't just necessarily re-record your answer as many times as you need to. You only get that one time. The question flashes up on the screen, and then you're given like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and there's like a timer in the corner once you've hit record. Now, as someone with a visual impairment, this is absolute hell because it is so stressful to have to zoom in my computer to get close to then read what it said, like what the prompt says, then to zoom out to make sure that I'm sitting at a good point for the camera where I don't look awkward and far away from it. And then you're nervous because you're trying to give as thorough of a question as possible. But since it's not zoomed in, because you have to make sure that you are framed properly on the camera, you can't see how much time is remaining. So then you can't navigate to stop it. So when I did this, I would answer my question and then I would just sit there staring at the camera, kind of smiling, waiting for the time to run out because I couldn't easily navigate being able to turn it off. It was not fun. It was not fun at all. And this may be a shocker, but I did not move forward in that interview process. So if you are going to use one of those platforms, then you need to make sure that you're giving options. You could offer that someone could use that for flexibility purposes, or you could offer to do a phone screen or a Zoom that's then recorded or something like that. Part of it being recorded, one of the perks is then the hiring manager is able to directly review it as opposed to the recruiters having to take a ton of notes. So doing a Zoom and then recording it, that's another way that that can be done easily. But it's incredibly stressful situation to have to do that. So make sure that you are using what makes sense for people. And if you are going to use a platform like that, you're giving other options that people can use instead of that, because I really felt like I was at a severe disadvantage with using that. And another piece of advice I have for employers, because I gave that feedback to the recruiter, you know, they let me know that I wasn't going to be moving forward. And I was, you know, I was fine with that. I wasn't questioning that, but I did let them know, listen, I understand. I do want to say I have a visual impairment and I did find it really difficult to navigate the platform. And I was pretty much just dismissed. Like they really didn't seem to care about my feedback. I think it came off to them like I was making excuses as to why it wasn't good and why I wasn't moving forward. And it was a contributing factor as to why my answers weren't great. But at the same time, if I didn't answer it well enough, I honor that decision. But just moving forward, they should know that it's an issue. But yeah, that's happened to me a couple times where if it doesn't work out, I then will be like, hey, just so you know, like this was kind of hard for me. And it's just oh yeah, well, thanks so much. We'll keep you in our system. Thanks for applying. You know, it's just nothing's going to happen from it. So if you really do hire, value having a inclusive interviewing process, take the feedback that people give you seriously. And then once you do go into interviews and everything like that, you know, making sure that people are aware of any accommodations that have been requested, because That is an incredibly awkward situation to be in if the interviewing team, once you make it to that point, whether that's in person or mostly these days it's virtual, if they're not aware of something and then they start to do something or ask something of you that, like, you've clearly stated is not easy for you to do, that's so uncomfortable for sure. And I'd say within that vein, when it comes to doing a phone screen, doing an interview, doing an assessment, because I have, you know, especially earlier on in my career, a lot of times I'd have to do like copywriting tests. So I'd have to write a mock press release or write mock social media posts so that people could see what my skill level was at, where I was. And so those can make sense. But then there's also times where I've had to take personality tests to make sure that I'm a good fit. And there was one where it was very early on in the process. It was with the initial application process that they made you do this whole, it felt like kind of an IQ test they made you do. And it was timed. And I've talked about this before, but in school, one of the best accommodations I ever got was extra time on tests. And unfortunately, that's not something that corporate America, a lot of the time, is willing to accommodate people, is with more time, because there's the mantra of time is money. And so I wasn't able to actually get through that assessment very quickly. That was, again, a situation where I did offer feedback to the HR team and the recruiting team, being like, hey, like, I didn't move forward. I understand. But just so you know, this was my experience. You know, you might want to make some adjustments moving forward for other applicants. And in that case, I didn't even hear anything back from them, which is another point that just in general within hiring processes, can you just respond back to applicants? I have legitimately gone all the way through a hiring process and then a company just doesn't get back to me. Like, did final interviews, gave them my salary expectations, and then I hear nothing. That is awful. That is such a terrible experience. And it says a lot about you and not in a very positive light as a company. So make sure that you are actually getting back to people and, you know, responding not only when they're giving feedback, but just in general, if they go through the process, they're entitled at that point to get a firm yes or no as to what the next steps are. If someone has just applied, yeah, sometimes you don't hear back. That's just kind of how it works. It's not ideal, but again, I accept that. But if someone has started in the interviewing process, if they've done an initial phone screen, anything like that, they deserve to get an answer and also within a timely manner too. So with those assessments and everything, again, that kind of goes back to when you're writing your job description, making sure everything is pertinent and it makes sense. Make sure that what you're assessing people on actually makes sense and it contributes directly to whether they can do their job or not. Having someone do a personality test, like, I would not recommend that. Just because maybe someone isn't an extrovert doesn't mean that they wouldn't be great at customer service or something client facing. And I think that a lot of those tests, that's what they get at. And I don't think that's really healthy, because it kind of really goes after that a fixed mindset more than growth. You know, maybe that's not what's easiest for someone, but if they've decided to go down that career path, it's something that they are willing and know they have to actively engage on working on. And I think that that should be encouraged for sure. But with those assessments, with interviews, schedule them. Don't surprise people. I've gone through hiring processes where people have purposely, like, not scheduled anything and just try to catch me off guard to see how I would respond to that. Did not realize at the time how much of a red flag that was. We can discuss that more in next week's podcast, but don't do that. And when it comes to assessments and stuff, like, for example, if you go in for an in-person interview and then they go, oh, and, you know, the last half hour, we're going to actually have you come over here and do this writing test. Okay, well, that's kind of an ableist attitude because you are working from the assumption that everyone who comes in is going to be able to just use the exact same system. You know, a lot of the computers aren't easily set up to be accessible for me. Like, they are. The software is there. But if I can't see it easily, that means that I have to sit there and I have to coach someone through how to set up the computer, or they have to call IT. And if they don't have someone that's ever had to use those functions before, sometimes IT's not even sure how to set it up properly. That's happened to me multiple times when I start a new job and I have to coach IT on, okay, well, you're going to go here and you're going to click this and you're going to set this up as the default and all this. And, you know, they don't have to be accessibility experts, but at the same time, don't put someone in the position where, again, they're going to feel like they're not set up for success. You know, if there is going to be an assessment, you need to be telling people very early on in the process. So something that I've done in the past is if I know that there is going to be an assessment of any kind, then I ask if I can bring my own computer, and then I can like sit there and do it on my own computer. And people should be very mindful, again, when it comes to how I'm able to be successful. If it's an assessment, be mindful of the amount of time, for sure. Like, does this actually have to be done in half an hour? Does that tell you anything differently than if you actually gave them a little bit more time? Part of it is seeing how people perform under pressure, and I get that. But again, that is operating from an assumption that everyone is able to equally access the information easily. And that's not the case. So keep all that in mind. You know, when it comes to like making your final hiring decision, one huge thing that I would, as a manager, as a member of a team, when it comes to if you're collaboratively making a decision, or a recruiter who's asking for feedback around, okay, well, like, why didn't you like this candidate, or why did you choose this one over this one? I would really push back on the statement of it just wasn't a good fit. You need to be able to trace why someone isn't going to be the right person for this job directly back to skills or experience that they spoke or didn't speak about within their interview. Just by saying it's not a good fit, to me, what that comes off as is this person just doesn't, quote unquote, fit in with the rest of the group, which makes me think that this person's just too different from the rest of us. I understand that fostering good team dynamics is really important. But again, going back to that, if you keep only hiring people that are exactly like the people you already have, you are robbing your company of a more diverse mindset of like approaching problems with different experiences to be able to find a good solution. I mean, I'm not saying that if you don't have a diverse team, you won't come up with a good solution. But if you did have a diverse team, you'd probably have a great solution, because here are people that have experienced all different things that they're going to be like, well, we might get pushed back on X because this is hard for me, or I've experienced this, or I know someone that's experienced this. I think that all that is so important to keep in mind with your hiring practices. Don't hire the person that just fits in, quote unquote. Hire the person that's going to fill that void on your team. And maybe that void is more than just a skill set, but, you know, having a diverse perspective that they can bring to the table. I think that's an important thing to ask. When I was in college, And the sorority would do recruitment. We would do this thing called a needs assessment. So you would do a needs assessment of two, okay, like as a chapter, this is what we think we're lacking, you know, in terms of diversity, or like maybe we need more strong students because our grades aren't as great. It's important to do that when you're appraising your team as well. You need to do that needs assessment to figure out what are the holes, what's going to make you a better team altogether, and making sure that it is not culturally within your company acceptable to just say it's not a good fit, move along, because that's how a lot of people can just be discounted for being different because they just don't fit. And that's really unfair. So that's important to take into account. So those really are my main tips on what employers can do. And again, just to recap, you know, we went over what you can do with forming your job description, how and where you post it, who you're trying to get it out to, keeping the application process as simple as possible, making sure that anyone that's involved within the hiring process has done extensive training to counteract any personal bias they may have, whether it's conscious or unconscious, using panels to offset that, making sure that you're asking people what pronouns they use, what accommodations they need. And then once you get into that process, giving plenty of options for people to be successful. By default, making sure closed captioning is used when you're using any sort of a video conferencing platform. If you are using one of those online screening tools, making sure people do know that there is another option if that's not one that's going to work well for them. Like how I said, that has not worked well for me in the past. And then making sure you're heeding feedback on how to improve your process, and that you're not just accepting someone isn't a good fit, because that is just a catch-all for they're different from us and we want to go with someone that's more similar. And maybe they're not a good fit because they don't have XYZ experience. That's very different. That's very different. Like I said, you need to be able to trace it back to experience and skills and the answers that we're given, and not just some sort of a intangible gut feeling of you don't know if you would like really get along with this person that well, so you don't think that you're going to hire them, even though they are fully qualified for the job and possibly even more qualified than another applicant, but you just liked them as a person more because they were more similar to you. So that's a lot to chew on. And I don't expect any company to just take this podcast, listen to it, and overnight change everything. But identify the things that you can look at, you can look at within your company, and you can change now and make incremental changes. There's no reason that 6 months from now, this is just your standard practice, or a quarter from now. But doing it overnight, that's a lot. You'd probably get pushback because we've talked about this on the podcast multiple times. People don't like different. They don't like change. So we have to make sure that we're strategic about doing it so that we are building towards a more equitable world for everyone. With that, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Make sure you tune in next week, where then I give the perspective on, as an interviewee, things to be looking for to make sure that a company is inclusive when you're going through that hiring process. If you haven't already, please make sure you subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you prefer listening to it on. Go ahead and rate and review the podcast. It's one of the easiest ways for new people to be able to find the show. Follow us on social media. We have a Facebook page as well as an Instagram at Basically Blind Pod. And I'll see you next time. Bye.